My Astonished Heart and Object to Serve Man, two songs from a Brave New Wave session starring Jad Fair and Phonocomb. And Phonocomb are Dom Pyle, Reed Diamond, and Dallas Good. Dallas is absent, but Don and Reed are here. Hi.
Hello, Patty.
Hi, Patty.
I can't imagine when I first heard about this project with Jad Fair anything weirder than Jad Fair with Shadowy Men. Could you imagine anything weirder? Like, when did you know it would work?
Well, I don't know why that sounds weird.
Well,
it sounds perfectly natural to me.
You think, really?
Well, I think that one of the things that perhaps we had thought about was that we, of course, are an instrumental group, so we hadn't worked with very many singers. And Jad isn't actually so much of a singer as he is almost more of a spoken word kind of guy.
Yeah.
And so it seemed to me that the melodic parts of the songs would still be reliant on the band as opposed to, like, laying back behind a singer. So in that way, it seemed that, hell, we'd had the kids in the hall talk over enough of our music. Why not Jad Fair?
bitterness?
No, just a fact of a way we've been used to working.
Yeah, okay.
You know?
And we all had enough records that had singers on them that we kind of figured out sort of how it worked and figured that we'd try our hand at it.
Mm-hmm. What I mean is most of the stuff that I've heard of Jad and Half Japanese has this crazy, chaotic sort of improvisational thing about it.
Well, you see, that depended on what you'd heard. We'd heard, the stuff I had heard was Jad Fair with the Pastels.
You didn't think that was crazy improv-y?
No.
Okay.
No, most of that sort of like love ballads and, you know, quite finely produced and, you know, the stuff I heard anyways.
Some of it you can tell that they're making it up sort of on the spot, that they don't really know the songs too well.
Yeah. And like it could just fall apart any second.
Yeah.
It has that quality.
I think that that was something that, you know, it was sort of like the Exquisite Corpse method of getting together and seeing if something was going to work or not. I liked very much the attraction that it was going to be an experimental kind of thing that could fall apart or could work really well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you take these chances and you don't get results if you don't make calls. What can I say?
Did you want to do more crazy improv-y stuff? Did you start off with him just making noise and seeing what happened? Because in the end, these sessions are pretty coherent sounding, like there's structure.
We would basically, he came to our practice space and he would have about, 30 or 40 songs written.
Just
the lyrics.
Pages of words, little stories.
And I'm serious, if we ran around the corner for a roti and came back, he would have written three more. In fact, it got to the point where we wanted to take the pen and paper away from him because we thought that he would exhaust us. Before he left town.
As it was, he was kind of exhausting us. We started writing T-Rex parody songs.
Yeah, so some of them are, needless to say, unrecorded. But basically what he would do is he would just look at us and say, play. And
did you look at each other and go, whoa.
Yeah, well, somebody would start a riff and then somebody else would join in. Sort of like, I guess, you know, the equivalent of comedy would be theater, sports, or improv or something like that, right? Where you're just thrown into a collective improvisational situation and you've got to construct a narrative out of it. And he had all these lyrics and then he would listen to the music that we were playing, leaf through his sheets, say, stop, 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 in a sort of a Jerry Lewis kind of fashion. And then he would come up with something that he could fit in. And I guess, you know, where the muse came from would depend on sometimes him, sometimes us.
So what did you say to help him out? Did you go, no?
Well, sometimes we would say, you know, do you want like a scary song, Jad? Or do you want a love song? Or maybe a song about some airplanes? And he'd say, yeah, Reed, some song about an airplane. That would be good.
Yeah, all of those things would be fine.
Yeah, or all of those things, actually. Let's do three of them.
A scary song about an airplane.
Yeah. And so I guess, you know, because we had done so much soundtrack work and, you know, you start
could deal
to work
with mood.
Well, exactly, or different kinds of genres or something. Or sometimes we would just want to make, like, loud rock band noise. And so I guess we wrote, in about 3 days, over 20 songs, for sure.
Now, the place that we practice in is probably no bigger than, say, like, the kitchen in a bachelor apartment. So
and there was Dallas was in there as well.
No, actually, Dallas wasn't involved at this point because this was originally a Shadowy Men project.
Okay.
And so it was Reed, Brian, and myself and Jad in this very tiny garage. And we didn't really have much of a PA. I think he was going through like a bass cabinet. We had the vocals going through a bass cabinet.
Yeah, does Jad really need a PA, though?
Well, for us to kind of like try and put some sort of structure to things. Yeah. And also, too, he put so much stuff together from like just sort of like the sound of what he's making, like when he's screaming or howling, it is as much lyrics as saying, yeah, you're my angel or whatever. Yeah,
Jad is incredibly professional, and he virtually never stops thinking about what it is he is doing in relation to the music. He's very sharp.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually.
Well, there's sort of a tale of cosmic coincidences that brought you together with him.
I guess sort of, yeah. A guy who we knew, Jeff Fierzig, had asked us, he was a Shadowy Men fan, had asked us to play his wedding in New York, and we had gone down there and played his wedding, and he was a filmmaker, and made this film of Jad Fair called The Band That Would Be King.
Mm-hmm. About half Japanese. Not just Jad.
And it was playing at the Toronto International Film Festival, as it was called then, and he phoned us and said, would we do a night of being Jad's backup band.
Or Jad called us. He suggested to Jad to call
us. Right. And so we learned a set of stuff. That's kind of how we got familiar, too, with the kind of stuff. We went through all the tapes he sent us and stuff. And then we learned about a 45-minute set and did a show at the Alma Combo, and it was a real fun. And Jad said that, you know, we were some of the best musicians he'd ever worked with. And blah, 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 blah. Honest, he said that. And it would, you know, at the premiere of the film, he said, Reed, would you guys like to make an album? And I talked to the guys, and we said, yes, we would.
Well, that's quite a long time ago, isn't it? Like almost 2 years?
Yeah, it was a few years
ago. Yeah, it was actually 2 years ago this fall.
And so was there any time where you didn't believe it was going to happen, or did you look forward to it?
Well, our schedules were really hectic. You know, we were at that time in the middle of the Kids in the Hall. Also, we had committed ourselves to the film Double Happiness. Plus, we were doing live shows, and so there was a little window there the next April where Jad came up. He's very busy, too. He tours an incredible lot, especially in Japan and Europe. And he came up for those, I guess he came up for 1 week in April. We wrote the songs and then just sort of sat on them for a while. And then we looked at our schedules again, and it looked like the next January would be the most possible time for him to come up. And, you know, that's when we approached Brave New Waves about the possibility of doing a session and things like that. And everything came together. And Brian was then working on Bruce McCullough's solo album. And so he opted out of the Jad Fair album. So Dallas Good from the Sadies.
Isn't he from a famous family as well, though?
He is from the Good Brothers. He is of Good Brothers lineage.
The Good Brothers, the country and western band who've been around for the last 25 years.
Yes,
or so.
He's a son of Good Brothers.
For people who don't know, Dallas is the good son. Before Macaulay Culkin was, Dallas was the good son.
His brother Travis is actually in the Good Brothers, too.
Okay.
They're both phenomenal guitarists. And Dallas is somebody on the scene who I've thought was an incredible guitar player. And he had actually come with us on some Jad Fair shows to sort of roadie and stuff because he was a big fan of Jad and wanted to see the shows. And so
he was taking a pop music class at York University, and he was writing a paper on half Japanese.
Okay, now did you read it?
No, he won't show it to us.
I'd be really curious what his academic thesis on half Japanese might be.
I think we might have to get a copy of that and include it in the
liner
notes.
Well, I think he made a deal with his teacher. I think he said, look, teach, I'm actually making a record with this guy. Can I just give you the CD at the end of the term?
That's what it was, actually. He deferred. Yeah. He just put off his essay long enough.
We went over the tapes, and some of the stuff we rearranged, but it was remarkably, didn't change too much. Dallas, you know, changed what he wanted to for guitar parts, but as far as structure and stuff, it didn't change that much from the demos. And we decided to do a couple of live shows first, just so that when we did record the stuff, it had, you know, it sounded like a band, and there was some oomph, and it had come to life. So we did another show at the Alma Combo and one in Guelph, and then went and had a whole bunch of fun recording.
Now, did you do this as Phonocomb, or did you?
No,
do it
we
as...
didn't have a name. We just Jad Fair. We hadn't really decided at that point in time.
Can someone explain Phonocomb to me, other than it just sounds cool?
Isn't that a good enough reason?
All right.
All I can say is Jerry Garcia got the name Grateful Dead out of the encyclopedia, and or out of the dictionary, rather, and we also got Phonocom out of the dictionary.
Okay. Is it true that Chad writes with a rock thesaurus?
Yes. Yeah.
Can you tell me what a rock thesaurus is? Like, where could I buy one?
You can't. I think that David got it from, his brother got it from a library
sale.
Yeah,
he got it at a library sale, something that, I don't know.
It was a nickel.
Something that Rod McEwen wrote many years ago. And it was basically kind of like a catalog of musical cliches. It had lines pertaining to, like, you know, any subject matter that you wanted to. If you wanted to write about sunflowers, you would look up sunflowers in this thing, and it would be like, you know, you are my sunflower, I'm a sunflower for you.
One of the songs he does just read out of the book, I forget which song it is, Close My Eyes, yeah. I think.
Oh,
is
Lucinda?
It Lucinda?
Lucinda? Lucinda. He just gets the book, and we almost died laughing.
Did he look, is Lucinda in the rock thesaurus?
No. It was... You are my love, you are my angel, you are my special angel.
Yeah,
you are
the sunshine of my love. Yeah, you're the, yeah.
Does he laugh at this stuff too, or is it you guys just laugh?
Well, sort of and sort of not. It's really difficult to tell with him whether he thinks it's very funny or if it's kind of like inspirational things for him.
Chad has a very good sense of humor, but he doesn't ever really want to go into being goofy. You know, and I guess maybe all of us who deal with humor music know that line where you don't want to just, like, go for, like, an obvious, you know, sometimes it's just corny.
Yeah.
And Jad has a very good sense about that. One thing I really enjoyed about working with Jad, and one of the reasons I wanted to, was he seemed to me that he was probably the most sincere musician on planet Earth. And
you have to qualify that.
Yeah, what does that mean?
Well, meaning that he seemed to be totally devoid of irony, or doing things in sort of as a shtick sort of thing, right? That he would genuinely believe it, well, in the notion of true sincerity.
Yeah.
You know, and it seemed to me that would be the only way that you could actually write love songs, and the only way you could write about, you know, monsters or what. I mean, here I sound like I'm not being ironic, but I mean, the world is just so full of, well, what? David Letterman, irony, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And it just seemed, for me, having worked on a comedy show for 5 years and having to deal in a lot of humor and irony, it was just really refreshing to work with almost a Sun Ra type figure, you know?
You think, really?
Well, sure, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, were you familiar with the stuff that he did before?
Well, because we learned it, right?
Of course. Yeah, but I mean, years before, like, did you consider the issue of whether or not he touched your soul as a sincere expression?
Actually, I didn't like Jad Fair when I first heard him. When Don had made me a tape some years ago, and I didn't care for it at all. And actually, when we decided to do the stuff with Jad, I was probably the least in favor of it. I didn't think he could sing very well. I didn't think the songs were that great. And they grew on me.
Oh, yeah.
And when we were doing, learning the stuff, some of the stuff I just thought after a while was really incredible, especially the stuff with the pastels. And I think that it was good to become familiar with quite a bit of his stuff to decide what kind of stuff we wanted to write, because I think we did consciously decide the kind of things that we thought were the strongest he'd done with either Half Japanese or the pastels or any of the other number of you know, groups he'd done. I'd run into Yola Tango a few months ago, and they have also done an album with Jad. It was interesting because they had almost the same experience, but and I've told them that when their album comes out, we will compare it.
And they said, you guys are so competitive.
Yeah, right. but it was their experiences were almost identical. They said, you know, they, you know, wanted to work with Jad for a lot of the same reasons I had said.
And he lived in Hoboken at the time.
Yeah, he lived next door, and he pestered them. And but they said he would come in with a sheath of paper, and they would just start playing, you know, what do you want, like a scary song? And, like, the experience actually sounded exactly the same.
Well, actually, the Yola Tango thing was even, like, put together a lot quicker than ours. They recorded a whole album in one day, and only the bass player could see Jad when they were recording. Mm-hmm. And they would all start playing, and then James, the bass player, would just signal to the rest of the band when Jad had stopped singing. But
we could have almost done this album.
Yeah. It sounds like he was respecting the music, though, as well. Yeah. I mean, when I was listening to these sessions, he's following. He's not, like, just singing whatever he wants over whatever you provide. He is, like, consciously laid down things in a respectful manner. Like, the song is cohesive.
Well, right. For us, you know, the stuff was done very, very quickly compared to how we're used to doing things. We generally kind of take a lot longer writing stuff, and we don't ever produce that many songs in such a short period of time. But for him, this was kind of like a prolonged session. This was, for him to work for like 6 days on an album was almost unheard of.
Did he think you guys were persnickety or something?
Not really, actually, yeah. Because it was spread out over such a long period of time, it seemed like it wasn't really that much time. And also because we did live shows to coincide with that, it didn't seem so much. But
if he lived closer, this album would have been on sooner.
Yeah.
And if our schedules weren't so busy, yeah. etc.
There was something that you said earlier, though, that I, you know, wanted to comment on, the what you said about shtick. Actually, because I think I've known Jad's stuff and Half Japanese, like their very first single, I bought that through mail order from,
my God.
Through an ad in Trouser Press magazine. People that I know that bought like Trouser Press or Rock Scene magazine. There was a few bands that always advertised in those things. You know, mm-hmm. the very first people that made independent records, and Half Japanese were one of them. And it just looked like this crazy, weird, just ridiculous nonsense, and I was
and
probably
it was.
Like, yeah, it was like 13 or 14. I get this record in the mail for $3 that has 11 songs on it, a 45, mind you, not an album, 11 songs on it. So, you know, hearing what he has done for so long, I think, and then after doing the stuff with him, I think that what he does sometimes does kind of like cross over into shtick, and I think that partly is because he does produce so much stuff, he works with so many people, and he is very conscious about who he is, you know, as an artist, as a performer, and sort of like where he seems to. I mean, he knows that there is a like specific place for him, and that there are only certain types of people that are going to like what he does. So, I think in some ways it is conscious, in that he is aware of how he is writing songs. But in another way, it really is Jad. So it's
I think when I was saying his strongest stuff is the stuff that doesn't, but he does have things that for sure
that was kind of, I think, the thing that we wanted to do most with this was to not to just, you know, put out something that was really lo-fi and do something that was it was written by Shadowy Men.
Lucinda, Dreamy Eyes, Life of the Party, That's Where I Went Right, The Beast Within, and UFO IFO, tracks from the Jad Farrin Phonocomb session. Reed Diamond, Dom Pyle are still my guests from our Toronto studios. What is your favorite musical moment from these sessions, and maybe from that last chunk of music, each of you?
Well, for myself, we were recording this around Valentine's Day, I believe, and Dreamy Eyes was definitely something that I was sending out to my lover, and I thought that Sally Lee's vocals were the icing on the entire experience.
Sally Lee from Venus Cures All.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And I actually got the opportunity to, when we were mixing this, to make my own karaoke tape that I do often sing to my girlfriend when she comes home.
Oh, you get all mushy on Valentine's Day.
No, I do this every night, actually.
Okay. All right.
He's trying to teach her the words so that she can sing it back to him. Reed has an instrumental mix at home.
Did Jad know that this was the one that touched your heart, Reed?
He would just know that spiritually, I think.
Okay, all right. And for you, Don?
Probably UFO IFO.
Why?
Hey, that's Dallas's favorite.
That's Dallas's favorite? Well, UFO IFO... I don't really know about it. I think that it was probably just how the guitars in that song just kind of descend into this wash of noise, and it creates this kind of like soaring thing before the instrumental part at the end, and that kind of happened by accident. Dallas did that sort of by accident and sort of on purpose, and it just made the song musically soar, I think, at the end of the thing. And the lyrics were just so ridiculous. You know, they're kind of like a Roswellian UFO cover-up, that the government really has alien bodies and that they're hiding them from us. And
does Jad ever talk about this UFO stuff? Because he has like 30 songs about aliens and UFOs.
Nothing, but I think the only literature that I saw him read was the National Enquirer.
Jad doesn't really talk very much. You know, it's very difficult to get him to talk about very much stuff.
He mostly spends his time cutting out paper dolls.
And writing. More songs!
And they are beautiful paper dolls.
You've seen them, yeah. They are. Everybody in everybody he sees, he gives one to practically. But at night he would just go over his thing at Ian Danzig's and he would just cut out paper dolls all night and he'd show up the next day with another 10 songs.
Would he stay with? Did he stay somewhere else? With you guys?
He stayed with our friend Ian Danzig, who's the editor of Exclaim magazine.
Okay.
Actually, when we were here doing the recordings, it was... Was it Canada Day or was it the Fireworks Festival? Something. So Ian and his girlfriend and Jad and I went for dinner and then went down to see the fireworks. And that was actually a really kind of like, may sound kind of cornball, but sort of like a magical moment in the experience. Because we went down to see these fireworks and Jad is such a contained and reserved person. So we went down to see these fireworks and Otsuko had sparklers, and so we lit the sparklers and we were kind of waving them in the air, and Jad started doing this dance when the fireworks were going with these sparklers and jumping around, and it was like the only time that we ever saw him kind of like really lose control other than when he was singing.
And he wasn't doing it to make you laugh, was
he? No. This is like down there. It was like, you know, he was like just experiencing such joy from seeing the fireworks. It was kind of cool.
With Jad's stuff, it seems like he's sort of, because he seems so free and easy about the way music happens, there's kind of a spontaneous quality about it. Did it ever occur to you when you were recording with him to, like, you know, Don, maybe you sing a song and let Jad play guitar and let's see how Reed can drum just to see what would happen?
No, it's Jad's show.
Yeah. He didn't want anybody to, like, try anything unusual?
Well, if we had had more time, I think that for some people, they're able to do this and other people, they're not. I mean, when we thought about, like, you know, having to record, not having to record, but like the prospect of recording 20 songs, I think we ended up doing maybe like 22 songs, something like that, over the course of time, that there really wasn't that much time to do experimental stuff when we had already worked out something. So, I mean, we really didn't have that much time to spend... Trying something which may or may not work. We kind of more or less stuck with what we thought would work best, or what we thought
an efficiency
we
thing.
Could, yeah, that's
well, the stuff we had written that first week and the way that was arranged, and we went through and selected which of that stuff had worked the best, and then arranged from there. So, I think we thought we were going to end up with maybe some more time, but I mean, I'm impressed that we got as much done as we did.
Yeah, it seemed like a very lot. We recorded more songs than. What are in the session, and the majority of the songs will make up an entire album.
So Shadowy Men, I hear, and I guess this isn't rumor anymore, is you're going to be Fred Schneider's backup band now?
Everything's rumor until anything happens, right?
Okay.
As it stands, Steve Albini is producing Fred's next solo album. And he had asked us to play, I think, on about a third of the record.
Okay. Yeah, it's three different bands, each of them doing five songs. And so
this project does seem to shift a bit week to week. So we'll see if it actually... But, you know, that's the nature of the entertainment.
Yeah, I'm not sure I understand the concept. Like, does it mean that Fred will come down to your place and
will be
locked in a room for a week?
Exactly.
And see what
in the very same bachelorette kitchen that Jad Fair once stood in, Fred Schneider will stand in.
And once again, Fred isn't exactly a singer. So,
hey, well, people would disagree with that.
Well,
he's a stylist.
After working with Jad Fair, I think that we could understand how we could work with Fred, you know, because he is, again, an eccentric kind of singer. And I think for the same reasons that Jad worked well with what we were doing, that Fred, we would, you know, work well with Fred too.
Except these are songs that Fred has written. We're not co-writing with him so much. We're sort of taking his sort of bare bones demos and sort of fleshing them out into songs.
Yeah. And when do you think this should get going?
He's supposed to come up here, it was supposed to have been September, but he's supposed to come up close to the end of September, and then we'll record in October.
Yeah. Do you think you're going to get hooked on this vocalist thing, and you're either going to have to hire somebody to sing in Shadowy Men, or one of you is going to have to discover a hidden talent?
Oh, absolutely.
For sure?
Yes. We have a dozen singers lined up.
Can you give me a hint who?
Katie Lang,
you can't mention
Reed.
You can't mention Mary Margaret O'Hara.
Oh, okay.
No. We would, actually, we've always done, you know, a lot of local shows and stuff with guest singers and stuff like that, you know, and it's never been something, I mean, obviously the band loves being instrumental,
But, you know, we like working with other people as vocalists, vocal stylists and stuff too. So we're, I guess we're always for hire.
No, we really have no plans beyond the Fred Schneider thing. We don't know what we're doing.
Do you want to hear my Lou Reed story?
Oh, yes,
okay.
Yes.
Okay.
You've got to hear the Lou Reed story.
All right.
I wore this Lou Reed shirt I had to practice one day because I knew that Jad knew Lou Reed because, of course, Maureen Tucker had produced one of his albums, the drummer for the Velvet Underground, and he toured with her. And so I said, I guess I have my Lou Reed shirt on today. And he sort of looked at me and I said, I said, have you ever met Lou Reed? And he goes, yes, Reed. As a matter of fact, I toured with him. Maureen Tucker opened a tour. And I said, how did that go? And he said, well, he hated me. Now, Jad is not the kind of person that I would think anybody could hate. You know, he's okay, maybe you don't like him, you don't care for him, but as a person, hate wouldn't be an attribute that I could think of. And he said, well, what happened? And he said, well, you know, we were doing this tour, and the first night of it, Lou Reed came out and was watching me because I played a couple songs of my own. And he came up to Mo after the show and said, who is that guy? Don't let him do his songs anymore.
Oh, my God.
And he said, I guess they were in the Netherlands or something, and he was trying to get a court order because I guess he thought he was ripping them off or something. I don't know. So anyways, when they came to Toronto, somebody was doing a documentary on Lou Reed, and they were filming Maureen Tucker first. And Lou Reed went up to the cameraman and said, don't film that guy. There's your lesson of having it, because I think that Jad has probably always idolized Lou Reed.
Yeah.
But there's what happens when you meet, you know, it's like...
He's like the head of the Velvet Underground Appreciation Society.
Exactly. And it's like he just hated him. He just wanted him, like, thrown right off the tour.
Oh, God.
So
we should have known something was up with that new motorcycle helmet haircut of Lou's.
Should I tell the John Cale story?
Yeah, okay, but
no,
Reed,
no John Cale
you should have gotten some background on this. You shouldn't show up to practice wearing a Lou Reed t-shirt. That has, like, traumatized him.
I don't even like Lou Reed. Now I don't like Lou Reed is what I meant to say. But
okay, John Cale.
No, I'm kidding. There's no
okay,
John Cale story.
Right. I want the Mo Tucker story.
I thought this was